Hey there, I'm Priscilla. I'm so glad that you're here. As always, the chat is the place where you and I come to just have conversation and talk about things that are important in both of our lives. And today is going to be a real important conversation. We're actually talking to two people that we've talked to before. We had another show with them, but it was so powerful and so impactful, we knew we needed to do it again. We're talking about parenting. How do we raise our sons and our daughters to be successful adults? We're going to tackle that topic, and we're going to do it in a way that hopefully will be impactful to you. So you're going to want to stay tuned. Even if you're not a parent, listen, stay tuned, because you have young people in your life that need the influence that you bring to them. It's going to be a great show. This is the chat. It's a place where we chat, where we talk about stuff that matters in your life. And I'm so glad that you are here. This is a part two. So if you've not seen the part one of the conversation we've been having, then just know this is part two. You've got to see part one. We've been having a great conversation, and we're just going to keep that conversation going. We're having it with two of my favorite people because they deal with an issue that is very near and dear to my heart, and that's parenting. That's how do I raise these boys to be men of honor? How in the world do I do that? They've really helped me to do that in my life through their books and curriculum, through their speaking and teaching. And so please help me welcome today David Thomas and Sissy Goff. Thank y'all for coming.
Oh, we're delighted to be here.
I'm so glad that you came back again. This is going to be a fun episode because you and I have had an opportunity to talk about lots of different aspects of parenting, but now I'm going to unleash the audience on you, and they get to ask their own questions that matter to them and that deal with things that are happening in their life right now. But first of all, just tell us what it is you do. Some people that are just brand new to you two need to know what it is that you do.
We counsel children and families is our biggest job, in a lot of ways, probably our biggest job. And we started about 5 and go up through 18. And we work in a place called Daystar Counseling Ministries in Nashville. And we do individual counseling and group counseling and families, and have about 1,300 families that are at Daystar currently.
Really?
We don't see 1,300 families ourselves.
Oh, my goodness.
But we have a large staff with 4 dogs on staff that are
four
our
dogs.
Favorite therapists of the
what,
children.
Do the dogs literally contribute to the... What do they do with the kids that come in?
You know, my dog was the first one we ever had, and I was meeting with a girl who, which happens obviously in counseling, a girl told me that she wanted to take her life, and I needed to go get her mom and bring her mom up and tell her, and I left the room and walked in, and my dog just happened to be at the office with me that day for some reason, and my dog had jumped into her lap and was licking her little face. Mm-hmm. And I walked out of the session, and our boss, Melissa, said, "Can you start bringing Noelle every day?" And since then, now we have 4 dogs that are such a part. And the kids literally will look on our website and say, come in for the first time and say, "Where's Lucy?" or "Where's Owen?"
Oh,
and they're excited, and I think it warms everything being there.
What have you guys found? Before we get to the questions, I want to ask you, what have you found to be the number one issue you're dealing with families who bring their children into your counseling center?
The most common issue we're seeing coming through our doors now is anxiety.
Anxiety in the children.
Anxiety in children is considered a childhood epidemic in our country now. The numbers
Why
are
is it
staggering.
Happening? Why are our kids having anxiety?
A couple of reasons I think stand out. The research would tell us that anxious parents create anxious children.
Oh, goodness.
And so we're doing a good amount of hovering. The helicopter parent is a significant contribution to that equation.
Okay, so helicopter parents are helicoptering because we're anxious? Is that why we hover? Because we just are like,
fearful.
Oh, concerned.
Yes.
Yes.
And it's rubbing off on our kids.
Yes. I had a family recently who came in, and they had a really anxious daughter who was in kindergarten. And as they started talking, the mother ended up saying that they had already had a parent-teacher conference because the teacher she wasn't happy with the grades the daughter was getting in kindergarten. And this parent was so anxious, she was already intervening that much. And what happens then is the child doesn't believe she or he's capable. And it doesn't have to be just with grades. It can be anything. And I think instead we want to think about how do we empower them to believe that they're capable of whatever it is they're trying to launch into the world to do, because that's what they're doing as they're growing up.
Is there a what is the fine line for a parent like myself who's concerned about her kids' safety? What's the fine line between keeping them safe and hovering? How do you know when you've crossed that line?
I think we definitely want to be prioritizing safety, but we also want to be prioritizing risk and really creating opportunities for our kids to build courage. And we talk a lot in our new book about how courage shows up in the presence of fear, not the absence of fear. So kids have to have opportunities where they feel afraid. Parents have to have opportunities where they feel afraid for kids to be able to experience risk and build courage.
Oh man, that's gonna be a hard one, isn't it? To allow our kids to be afraid and not rescue them.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
I'm gonna need to read your book about that one. I can tell you that right now. All right, we've got some great questions that we wanna ask. There is a young lady that's ready to give us her question. What is your name?
Artina Dwyer.
Artina, thank you so much for your question. What is it?
I was just wondering, what is an appropriate age to give a child a cell phone, especially nowadays?
Oh, okay, in our technologically crazy culture, what would be the appropriate time and age to give a kid a cell phone?
We get that question all the time about every technology gadget, I think. And what we really would say about anything that children are asking for is that you want to always parent with a group of like-minded parents, because there will be different kids that different things are appropriate at different ages, because every child matures at a different rate. And so we would never say 15 is the magic age to give a cell phone, because some 15-year-olds would be ready and some 15-year-olds would never be ready.
Mm-hmm.
And so we really talk about parenting and community and having a group of like-minded parents that you all decide together, this is when we're going to give kids our cell phones, and that you don't want to be the first parent to do that, because if your child is the first to have every item, that child is so often going to be leading the pack and be considered wild. Whereas if you're the last parent for your child to have every item, then that child's often going to find their way to the item without it coming from you. And so we always say, have some parents you're parenting with, so that then when they say, well, everybody else has, which every child will say, everybody else has whatever it is, you can say, well, that's funny, because I talked to Mr. Thomas yesterday and his kids don't have that yet either.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to do that at the time that's right for you. So
and
that's not a really specific answer. But
could you give us any indicators as to what you're looking for as to what makes it right for them? Like, what would be a reason why a child at 12 or 13 or 14 or 15, what would be the time where we go, you know what, you could probably have need a cell phone with you now?
I'm going to let you answer why a reason would be, but I had a parenting, I did a parenting seminar last week and we talked about technology, and a mom said, I'm really concerned that my fifth grade daughter needs a cell phone now, because she says everyone else has it, and when she's on her iPad, she's always worried that everyone else has a cell phone. Which my reaction was just like yours.
An iPad?
Yes.
I don't even have an iPad.
Well, and the great thing was, sometimes when we do seminars locally, we'll bring groups of kids to answer questions. And I had all these high school girls who said, she doesn't need one yet. She's fine. And it was so powerful coming from them. But that the right answer is never because your child's asking for it. That doesn't mean it's time or that they're ready, that they're begging you.
And we would say three things that I think you can really look at that are important. One is need. Would it benefit us as a family? If I'm picking you up at a practice that I don't have to park, drag your siblings out of the car at that point and find you, is there a legitimate need that would demonstrate, okay, we could all benefit from this convenience? But also look at responsibility and respect. Mm-hmm. And I love, we talk a whole lot in our new book about creating what we call a technology contract. So when your kid gets their first cell phone or their first tablet or first laptop computer, that you create a contract that outlines the terms clearly. Here's when it can be used, here's when it can't. This is what I will do if I find out you have used it irresponsibly, to look at pornographic content on the internet, that sort of thing. And that I am excited to explore opportunities to get technology for kids who are responsible and respectful. So if it's hard, it's a great thing to be able to leverage with chores. If it's just too hard to put your clean clothes up and make your bed every day, I'm thinking having a cell phone will overwhelm you. It's just going to be too much. You can't handle that basic responsibility.
Right.
You can get some boys really motivated to take care of their room with a gadget.
Can I tell you, I get concerned, though, because technology continues to advance.
Yes.
Every year, there is a new gadget or a new level of the same gadget. There's just something
new
else
apps.
That your kid or that you even needs. And it seems like we are, as adults, we're even spoiled to where we're so used to having the next thing that we think we're satisfied, but then there is a next thing that's going to come out. We got to have that too. So at what point, how do you feel like what can we do to keep our children, give them the technology they need to enjoy themselves or that they want to enjoy themselves, but at the same time continue to make them contented, satisfied children with the simple things in life, playing outside and, you know, using their imagination and their creativity. How do we balance the two of those things?
I think so much of that has to do with having boundaries around it, that they don't have everything right when they ask, that they are being responsible and respectful in terms of that, and that they're helping earn even the cost of something that they want, that they're working towards it can be really helpful. But having specific periods of time that they're just supposed to be outside playing, that they don't have access to technology. And the great thing is now cell phone companies will help you. I mean, you can log in and turn off cell service during certain periods of time. So it can just be built in.
Yeah, that's good to take note of.
Yes.
Okay, we've got another question. I'm so excited about this question. What is your name?
Julie Meyer.
Hi, Julie. Tell us your question.
My question is, how do we teach our children to keep the limits that we set at a friend's house when they don't have those same limits without it coming across as condescending or judgmental while they're over there?
Okay, so you're saying like your kid's going to a slumber party and you've told them they cannot watch PG-13 movies, but they're going to watch it at the other house.
Right, or time on an iPad or too much Wii or whatever the case may be. And we have a rule and they're trying to follow it and then they get over there and everybody's doing it. And so if they say, I'm not allowed to do that, then those parents take that as, oh, well, who do they think they are to parent like this? I'm, you know, or then your kid is exposed to something that you wouldn't allow them and you're trying not to be the helicopter parent. So you're trying to let them have that opportunity. But how do you teach them for success so that they can do that?
Very, very interesting.
It's a great question.
It is a great question. I'll throw out one thought and then you share something you're thinking. I think that there's a certain amount of homework that we need to do on behalf of our kids before they go into those settings. I really do advocate for parents asking important questions like, what movies are you okay? Would you prefer they bring a device or not? Here's kind of what's okay in our household. Here's what's not okay. And that we take on some of that for our kids. I think that's vital and really important. And also to send a real strong message to our kids to say, different parents are going to have different rules. And there's a way to say that, I think, that isn't judgmental to another family. We're just going to have different rules. So there will be some things that will apply in other places that won't apply in our household or vice versa. And your job when you're in another parent's home is to respect that. Just as when your friends are in our home, it's their job to respect that too.
And I think you can even take that on yourself and call the other parent and do it in a way that's kind of self-deprecating where you say, we're nerdy at our house and we don't watch these kind of movies or we don't do this. And so we just wanted you to know. And that way your child's not set up to be in a situation where they feel awkward. But I think another piece of that is giving them some language around helping them get out of a situation, whether it's just, I'd love to do something else instead, or if it gets really hard that they know that they can get in touch with you and you would even come up with a reason that you could come get them if they get in a hard situation, and that you'll come and not hold it against the other child or the other family, but that you'll always give them a way out and take the brunt of it yourself where they're not ostracizing themselves from the other children.
You know, that's so interesting because we kind of have, it's not a hard and fast rule with our boys, but for the most part, we just don't do slumber parties a whole lot. You know, just folks that want the boys to come spend the night for birthday parties. We just kind of don't do that as a rule. And you know, we've got cousins they can spend the night with and, you know, people that we know very well, which is just really a small pool. It's like two families. And so that's really it. But it is hard when the mom calls you from the kid at school and they say, we want one of your sons to come over and spend the night. It's like, how do you say, yeah, no, without making that mom feel like she's a bad mom or you don't want your kid in their house. Mm-hmm. It is hard to kind of stand your ground and not be judgmental. But I think being self-deprecating is part of that resolve. Mm-hmm. I think that's a great solution, yes. Don't you? To just say, you know, it's really about us. It's not about
we're
you.
Just, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, we got another question. Thank you so much.
My question is, in this age of social media, How do you navigate that without just telling them no?
I would say one of the biggest pieces of that, and obviously I work mostly with girls, so I feel like I spend half my counseling days talking about social media, but is that you know ahead of time whatever they're doing, that you have researched really well what is popular right now, because it changes. I mean, I'm hearing about something different every week,
okay,
and it changes.
Can you tell us what the current trends are that you're seeing with social media with girls and boys?
Yes, I will tell you about one that, and I really am big on not being super black and white where you say you can't ever do this, that you start small and make the limits clear and you increase them. But there is one thing that I would say kids do not need to be on, period. And it's the thing that I have the most girls bullied by than any other situation. And it's an app / website called Ask FM. And what it is, and some boys are on it, but I think more girls, but they can ask a question, and then anybody can post an answer anonymously. So I have girls all the time write on there, do you think I'm pretty? And all these kids can anonymously post responses. And so, you know, it's just licensed to bully.
So the person asking the question is not anonymous.
Right.
Just the people who are responding.
Just the people who are responding. And so that Ask FM is one of the biggest right now that I'm seeing that I have a lot of concern about. And there's always something like that out there, but again, it changes names. And so that's why we have to be so aware, mm-hmm. I think, and a step ahead of them, which takes a lot of work on our part, but a step ahead of them. And then I would say Instagram is one of the biggest I hear about, too, for girls.
And I see evidence of boys who are certainly doing a lot with Twitter and with Instagram. But generally speaking, I think girls are going to be way more into social media. I, in my office, am always aware when the newest video game's out. Like that, I know at all times. That's going to captivate a boy a mm-hmm. good bit more of the time.
So do you think the parameters around social media really needs to be set specific to that child, their level of responsibility?
Yes.
And a parent
level
just
of maturity.
Checking and seeing what they're posting and what they're looking at.
Yes.
And of things.
And we say a lot that you need to, in the beginning, have their password. You don't just need to be their friend, but you need to have their password to be able to check everything, have access to everything. And thankfully, technologically now, there are different things out there that we can subscribe to. Like there's an app or a website that sends you everything your child does on a smartphone, whether it's on the internet, texting, anything like that. There's so many things like that out there now that give us access, but that you really monitor everything in the beginning. And then as they get older, you ease up a little bit to give them more responsibility with it and to prove your trust.
I'm just curious, are you guys of the mindset that a parent should be able to read their teenager's diary?
Not a diary.
Not a diary.
Not a
but
diary.
I should have your password to your social media.
Mm-hmm. If there
in
is
the
a-
beginning.
In the beginning.
And check regularly in the beginning. And then as they prove trustworthy, you back up some.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. If there is a place where a kid, and this is oftentimes going to be more girls than boys, is writing, getting out feelings, this is what's going on in my world, I think a kid really should have a space where they can say whatever they need to say and not worry somebody's going to pick that up and open it up. And adolescents are going to work through a lot of strong emotions in that, so we may read things that make us a little bit crazy at times.
That's the part of it. I mean, because I have so many girls who will write, I hate my mom or I hate my dad. Mm-hmm. And what we say at parenting seminars is that they have written that and moved on 5 minutes later.
Yeah.
But if you read, I hate my mom, you will never forget that your child said that.
Mm-hmm.
And so they just need to have space to vent and be free of it, where it just stays with us.
Okay. All right, next question. What's your name?
Yes, Kara.
Hi, Kara.
Hi. My question is more towards Priscilla.
Okay.
I feel like I could relate because you have three boys, but you touched on it in your first segment about mothers with their sons and relating. So I, too, have three boys, 6'4" and almost one. And
oh, your hands are full.
Yes.
Bless you.
Yes. So in the midst of that, I'm a very girly girl. So I kind of feel like you might be, but how have you learned to embrace their boyness and just their full force and relate to them on their level where I'm not boy?
Well, I'm going to tell you one of my favorite things that has helped me with this is a little book by somebody. The name of the book is Wild Things. You need to get your hands on that book because it talks about just boys being allowed to be boys, that we kind of live in a culture that has tried to kind of, for lack of a better word, dumb down their masculinity and pull in that sense of adventure and risk. And so I'm serious. That book really helped me to just release them to be boys and to have fun being boys with them. So I am a girly girl, you are right. But I do get out in the yard and throw ball with them. I do play video games with them. They also help me, like I love to bake fresh bread and stuff in the kitchen. And they get their hands dirty in there with me and help me with that stuff too. But I just don't do those things with them. I kind of get into their world. And listen, I'm so not perfect at this parenting thing, which is why I need them, which is why, see, this is my own personal therapy time. Y'all didn't know it, but that's what this is really about. But I just try to dig into their world a little bit and participate with them. But I think we can still be girly girls and raise boys. At least that's what I've been told. So we're working on it. What'd be your best advice to her for sowing into the lives of her boys as a girly girl mom, but who wants to be engaged with her boys? What would you encourage her to do?
I think it really is about you being all of who God called you to be as a mom, and that there are those times when you are doing, I love just listening to you talk about what your life looks like with the boys, that you're just engaged with them in their play, in their world, but not stopping being a woman and a mom, and to know that a boy learns so much about his sense of masculinity through interacting with you as a woman, and that you are his first and most intimate relationship with the opposite sex. So many of his ideas about how women feel enjoyed, respected, cherished, appreciated, all those things come through his day-to-day interactions of just being with you. And so your role is vital, so vital.
You know what? They're getting to the stage now where, you know, when you used to get in the bed with your boys and you cuddle with them, or your kids in general, but these boys, you cuddle with them and, you know, they lay their head on your chest and you kind of cuddle with them this way. But we're getting to the point where now I get in the bed and my head is going on their chest. And it's the weirdest feeling that you got these big boys that are becoming little men, and you can start to see that dynamic starting to change as they get bigger and taller. So it is a strange thing raising these weird species called boys. All right, we've got another question. I think this is about adult children or children.
How you transition from being that parent to a teenager to now a young adult who's still living at home, maybe going to college, coming home the weekends, and allowing them to have their own freedom and make their own decisions. You know, even in high school of, you know, I don't want to go to church, something like that, to setting their own curfew, you know, and how to not be anxious and not have blood pressure medicine.
So the bottom line is they're old enough to have some freedom, but they still live in your house.
Yes.
So you're trying to figure out how to balance those things. Young adults still kind of attached.
I would say two things, and then you can jump in. But I think to think about, and we talk to parents of all ages about this, but you want to think about widening the boundaries for them with every year of their life. From bedtime, I mean, everything, to be really strategic, like we talked about with discipline, but strategic in that, so that when they're 18 and they move away from home, there's not that, woo, I'm free. You know, that you want to make it where when they move away, the difference is so minimal they barely notice. Plus the fact that you want them to mess up when they're living in your home, because they will mess up. And then you can help them work through it.
I love the emphasis that you put on the last part of that statement but they are still living in your house. And I think it's great to have house rules. And every December, without fault, I will have this conversation with some parents of a college-age student in my office. We'll say, he comes home at 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, wants to eat, going through the kitchen, takes a shower, and it makes me crazy. The dogs are up, whatever is going on, the lights are on, that sort of thing. And I think it is more than okay to have a conversation with a boy, something along the lines of, buddy, I get it. I know you are eating at 1 in the morning, out with friends at this point in your college life. I'm okay with that. You are not in your dormitory right now. No one takes showers at 2 in the morning here. We're going to sleep.
That's not what we do.
Right. That's not what we do. And I'm great with you doing those things when you're there. But here it is important that you respect that. Mm-hmm. And that's really what it's about. It's about respect the house rules.
As for me and my house, we don't take showers at 2 a.m. That's the bottom line.
No, we don't.
Yeah, I remember my parents saying to me, you know, I was getting in teenagers and stuff. I'll never forget my dad just always saying, you know what? As long as you live here, under my roof, there are some rules you're just going to have to abide by.
Yes.
And even for a friend of mine, 7 children I think she has, and my sister was talking to her about how do you navigate these teenagers, in particular the 17 and 18 year olds. And for the young ones, she has like a 2 to 4 rest time. That's their quiet time where they don't have to go to sleep, but they have to all be in their rooms doing something quiet. And Crystal said, yeah, but what do you do with the teenagers? And the mom looked back at her and said, from 2 to 4, we're all in our rooms and we're being quiet. Right. She's like, that's just what we do at our right. house. That is our rule. And as long as you live here, that's the rule for yeah. the house. And so we've got to set boundaries no matter the age limit of our kids.
I think it's appropriate to say, you may have stopped being a child, but I haven't stopped being a parent too. And you know, even as you're out at night, it is still appropriate for you to text me and tell me when you'll be in. Mm-hmm. And just
that's just
let
out
me
of
know.
Respect,
out
right?
Of
that
respect.
Has nothing to do with
yes,
the fact
exactly.
that you're a teenager now. It's out of respect for me and my house.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Good advice. They've got so much more good advice that they could share. I mean, like a lot of good advice, and they've written it all down. And I'm so glad that they've had this is that they have. This is one of many books that we have from David and Sissy, Raising Boys and Girls, The Art of Understanding Their Differences, so important to raise successful children. And then their brand new book is Intentional Parenting. You're going to want to get your hands on that. Will you guys please help me to thank them for being here with us today?